The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
Welcome to CIO Talk Radio with your host, Sunjo Gall. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Here's Sunjo Gall.
Good morning and welcome to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Today's topic is cheaper, better, and safer healthcare. IT innovation can help. Our guests for today's show are Rich Gears and Stanley Crane. Rich is the Senior Vice President, Enterprise Solutions and Enterprise IT with Cardinal Health, and Stanley is the Chief Technology Officer with Allscripts. Good morning, panel. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you today?
Very good. How about you?
Good morning, and thanks for inviting us.
Great. Now, how's business going on? Is this business better than summer? You would want to play golf and be or be inside?
Well, I'll tell you, the trees are starting to get some leaves on. There are branches here in Chicago, and the weather is warming up, so I'm starting to get a little summer fever. How about you, Stanley?
I think we've finally gotten through the most interesting part of our winter here in Chicago. You know, as they say in Chicago, there's two seasons, winter and construction's in full bloom.
Yes, it is.
All right. So thank you again for taking the time to participate on this show. Now, this topic has an emotional value for us, as well as it's important because a lot of people are interested in getting their health care under control. I mean, not only in the United States, but across the world, because most people are facing somewhat similar problem. And this is a place where we can actually see what can IT do, or IT innovation do, for that matter, to bring some, you know, breath of fresh air. So talking about the fact that we have, you know, the problem here, and where we are talking about this is not affordable for most people, it is sometimes quality-wise also there are problems, and it's not safe. The goal is, you know, it looks like reachable, but we are not reaching there. What is going on?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You think about the U.S. Healthcare situation. People would argue that the U.S. has one of the best healthcare systems in the world, yet it's also the most expensive, and it still has many areas where it can improve. It's just not serving all the people in the country as well as it should. And it's I think, quite frankly, just right now, a matter of focus. We're not asking for too much for health care to be affordable and safe for anyone, but we need some significant changes in how health care is delivered and how we pay for it, how we deliver it, and how we manage it. And interestingly, it seems that there's been a bit of a change here in the last couple of years. Just 10 years ago, when we were talking about universal health care in the United States, and it was sort of, very much routinely rejected by all. Today, I would say everyone involved, including companies, are starting to form coalitions, getting together and say, we have got to solve this problem, and the status quo just won't work anymore. So I think the answer is it can be fixed. We're not asking too much, but we're going to have to think differently about how we provide health care, how we pay for it, more importantly, how we manage health care. Stanley, what do you think?
I think there's a couple of aspects to this. So I have the luxury. I have the responsibility to fly to India a couple times a year to work with some of our development teams in India. I walk up to the ATM machine. I type in my PIN. It checks my bank back here in Chicago, checks my PIN, checks to see what kind of account balance I have, converts to rupees, and sends money back. And I've timed it. It's 10 seconds. The most difficult part of using an ATM machine in India is figuring out where's the English button, because it's in Hindi when you start. So it's 10 seconds. Where's the healthcare version of that? So to me, not the whole answer, but a piece of the answer here is information. If you have information at the point of care, you can make a better decision. How'd the information get there? And today we try to do that with a paper-based system. Imagine doing the ATM thing with a paper-based system. It's unfathomable, and frankly, we as a people would simply not accept it. So if you're in any kind of an accident, if you end up in the emergency room, one of the questions they will ask you is, when was your last tetanus shot? And if we are like most people, 50% of my sort of informal survey, 50% of the people in the U.S. don't remember when they got their last tetanus shot. So in the unhappy event that you ended up in the emergency room or you decided to go to India, they will ask you, when was your last tetanus shot? And if you don't know, you're about to get one. So you just got health care that you and your employer are going to pay for a tetanus shot that you may or may not have needed. So having information, having clear medication lists, having clear information about when your last exams were and what the results of those last exams were, that's critical. And to try to do that in a paper system is unfathomable, any more than it is fathomable to do that in a bank. Would you go to a bank that didn't use computers? Well, you do go to, a lot of people in the United States go to doctors who simply do everything on paper, and when you go from doctor to doctor or you move across the country, how does your information travel with you? So having the information at point of care is one of those significant changes that I think we need to help in the healthcare IT business, that we need to help catalyze.
By the way, I recently had to look at the paper-based healthcare records for my daughter at her primary care physician, and not only was it not readily available, I had to go into their office trying to read and decipher the notations that caregivers make on a paper chart or a paper record is almost beyond the average person. So there's a quality issue here and an availability issue that I think is a big part of the solution, on both on the provider side, but also on the patient or our side. The fact of the matter is that if we had personal health care records, say as an example, and those were tied into electronic medical records and other databases, we wouldn't have to, in an emergency, when someone's asking us questions about when did you get your last tetanus shot, and you're worried about your health or the health of your loved one, having to have total recall over a 10 or a 5 or even a 4-year period of time. It's just ludicrous, and why we put up with that in the U.S. healthcare system is beyond me.
I know privacy is one of the questions that comes up regularly, but you know, credit bureau. If you look at the analogs between healthcare and the financial industry, and I've been drawing a lot of those parallels lately, and trying to move some of those technologies and standards more like the financial standards than the healthcare standards. When you try to move between those two, and you say so in the healthcare business, what corresponds to your credit report, which is Rich's comment about the PHR. You know, the credit report, in a way, is very analogous to a PHR. Are we worried about privacy and security of that thing? And we should be. We absolutely should be. But we ought to have the credit report for healthcare, which Rich called a PHR.
Right. And Stan, I agree with you. These security and privacy issues are paramount. But we also can't allow those to paralyze our ability to make decisions that move healthcare forward. There has to be a solution, and there is a solution to the privacy considerations and security considerations. And nothing is perfect, by the way. But I'd have to think, considering the technology prowess of our industry, of our country, that we can solve these problems, and frankly, then raise the whole level of healthcare throughout. And like I said, that's one part of it. Another part is just, frankly, getting care to people who don't get care or whose care sometimes is simply walking into an emergency room and getting treated that way, which, by the way, is the most expensive way anyone could receive primary care. So technology and I think some basic process changes and how healthcare delivered will lead us out of this morass.
Now, let me ask you this. We always talk about this thing, you get what you pay for. That should not be applicable for healthcare, because that seems to be like a birthright that we all supposed to have, and our government, our you know, old society should be working towards it. But it's why is capitalistic approach coming to your fundamental rights? Does anybody, you know, does the whole system work towards that?
So you get what you pay for. Absolutely. Well, what happens when you don't repair your car, but you wait until it breaks down, and your mechanic, by the way, is rewarded for rebuilding your car but not changing the oil? So, you know, in this country, one of the things I've heard people talk about is that we don't really practice health care here. We practice sick care.
Yeah.
And by not doing, by not By not having the information, you're going to get another tetanus shot. By not having the information, you may get another examination or a blood test or some other procedure that you're going to get to pay for, right, that you didn't need and that you could have gotten. So imagine in a perfect world. So if we... So our NEPSI product, our National Electronic Patient Safety Initiative, which is free electronic prescribing for all physicians in the U.S., we're sending electronically the information from the physician to the pharmacy so that when the patient gets there, there was no handwriting recognition problem. There was already one set of safety checks and in the doctor's office so that when the patient arrives, you get a safe prescription. And I've done it, and it feels, frankly, we are so conditioned in this country to the physical paper. To walk out of the doctor's office, to walk to the pharmacy without that paper in your hand is a little disquieting. It's a little weird. But once you get there, it's already waiting for you, and it's already perfect. It's exactly what the doctor ordered, and it's frankly easier even for the pharmacist because they didn't have to read it, type it into their computer, and then go count to 30 and, you know, do all that stuff. I think we absolutely can start to bring in some of the electronification. The process that we're trying to go through today is analogous to the one that we've all done, I assume we've all done, in electronic bill paying. So when you pay bills online, today nobody would go back to paper. But there was a transition period where you're used to checks, you're used to writing out and doing the balance, checkbook balancing at the end of the month or forgetting to and occasionally getting the nice letter from your bank. We're asking healthcare to move through that transition from going from a paper-based system to an electronic system, which frankly today we'd never go back to in our personal lives in the financial industry. But I'm absolutely convinced that we can move in that direction and to help. You get what you pay for. How do we pay for things intelligently? How do we make better decisions with information without paying for the same test twice, without paying for the same procedure twice? And when you go on vacation and you hurt your knee skiing, what was that painkiller that the doctor put you on out there so that your doctor back home can know what happened without you having to remember? So...
You know, I'm thinking the analogy you just made, or the comparison you made about electronic payment of our bills, our home bills. And I know in the beginning when that started, a lot of people just didn't want to do it. They were afraid of issues they would have about security. Would it create fraud possibilities? And so the uptake was slow. But as you said, Stan, now everyone does it, and no one would go back. And I think the example also relates to the conversation we had a second ago about privacy and healthcare. Yeah, there's going to be breaches and there's going to be problems, but in total, the benefit, the value we're going to get out of the digitization of healthcare and healthcare records will more than pay or overwhelm some of the downsides that comes with it. And by the way, that example you made, Stan, about the electronic prescription, that applies to all the way into the hospital. If the prescriptions are provide an electronic form in the pharmacy, and that flows all the way to the patient bedside, and then there's technology at the patient bedside which is monitoring what drugs are being administered to a patient, and that's being checked back to a database that provides information about possible adverse drug reactions, individually or combined with others, and takes into account the person's medical history. Another major cause for poor health care gets addressed and probably one of the biggest flashpoints, which is at the patient bedside when a lot's going on and caregivers are focused on multiple people, and yet there's no one more important than you, the person who's in that patient and in that bed receiving health care.
Yeah, it's in a way it's a cyborg type system. I see it as a blend of human and electronics. It's not that electronics are going to replace the physician, and that's never the point. The point is to, you know, the guy went to medical school, he learned the names of all the bones of the body and all that stuff, that to become a professional, to help people. So how do we let them spend more time doing that and less time wrestling with order fulfillment that you were talking about earlier, Rich? you know, where he does something electronically and it's done already, his, from his perspective. It's handled, it's exactly the order he gave, where the information was there, so he didn't have to leaf through, you know, 2 inches of paper to find the right piece of paper that told him some critical piece of information and helped him make a better decision.
Right.
And it's a hybrid system. Let the computer do what it does really well, and give more time to the physician to spend important time with the patient making better decisions.
Especially in the areas of just duplicate tests. You go to see a primary care physician and you've just had a test recently. You go to another part of the country on vacation and a problem occurs. They can't access those records. They have to give you that same exact test again. But the original test is still valid. The information was accessible. The whole patient care process could be not only accelerated, but it would also result in less overall cost to the system. Today, we can't get that critical information flowing with us as we go from spot to spot or we visit one caregiver versus another.
Well, there's two ways to do that, and I like your idea that you talked about earlier, the PHR system. If we have a personal health record, I could push all my data to my personal health record, and then when I was, you know, in the other side of the country, I could access that information and give it to my physician, as opposed to trying to do this, you know, waiting until all the healthcare informatics systems are wired together so that we can share the information. We can do that today of a company called Medem.org, which was a nonprofit organization formed by the AMA and a bunch of other medical societies. You can go there today and create your PHR. Unfortunately, you have to hand enter it all.
Yep. And the key is, if you want PHRs, and frankly even EMRs for that matter, to take off, if you start networking those and you begin allowing the information to flow electronically with the right security, with the right controls, with people basically authorizing that information to move from one place to the other, then I think this whole area just takes off. And then suddenly, just like we have electronic bank accounts and electronic brokerage accounts and eBay accounts and things like that, now we'll have an electronic medical record where today none exists, PHR, complementing EMRs, and we now control our health care. I mean, you think about what companies over the last 10, 15 years have said, it's time to make all of us consumers of health care. Well, that was great, right? But all that meant was costs were being shifted from, you know, one place to the other in the health care system. To be a real consumer, you have to have information. And that information allows you to control your healthcare experience and your healthcare spending. And I think we're close. I mean, we are just so close, but we just need a little bit of a push to get to that final spot we want to get to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, talking about cost, I mean, we spoke about all the good stuff which we are talking with respect to IT innovation and other business process streamlining, which will help us take the healthcare to the next level. And it'll create a very good consumer experience. So what is the cost implication? And as it is, for some rhyme or reason, we are seeing the cost anyway going at a faster rate. It's the healthcare cost is increasing at a faster rate than inflation. And when we try bringing in these innovations, but what would be the cost and what is the ROI that we're going to get out of it? Because frankly, the person who's actually getting the healthcare delivery, or the consumer of that healthcare, does not want to pay a whole lot, and he doesn't care how does that happen behind the scenes.
Yeah. You know, the whole cost situation in the U.S. in healthcare is just very sobering. I was just looking at some stats this morning in preparation of our conversation, and in 2005, healthcare costs went up nearly 7%. The general inflation rate was half of that. We spent $2 trillion dollars a year in healthcare, and that's 16% of GDP. So clearly, costs are just not being properly controlled, and I think there's a lot of things that are contributing to that. I mean, there's clearly inefficiencies in how healthcare is delivered. Frankly, how the supply chain works in healthcare, frankly, I think could be dramatically improved. This causes prices to rise in general, but I think there's just general inflation there too. But I think there's some waste and some administration that if we looked at a couple different approaches to providing healthcare, I think we could find a way to rein in these costs. But you know, I think we also have to admit to something else too, though. I mean, the American population is getting grayer. We're getting older. We're getting better, but we're getting a little older, and you consume more health care. And frankly, boomers, and I'm a boomer, we demand better health care, and we're doing all sorts of things to improve our quality of life. Many of those create more health care costs. So there's a lot of things contributing to these rise in, Sanjog, and health care costs, but it's not like a fatalistic situation. We just don't have to accept it. We can do things about it, but it's going to require change by all the parties in healthcare, and right now I'm not sure everyone is on board with some of those changes.
If you wanted to control the cost of healthcare, if only 7% of the procedures and tests that we do today were duplicative or unnecessary because they were counterindicated by some other test that had already been performed, that 7% seems like easy. When I've talked to people across our industry, and what percent of healthcare is unnecessary or duplicative? And the answer that I get back has ranged from as small as 15%, 15, and as high as 50%. I find that mind-boggling. And there may be good reasons to do the same test twice, because I want to monitor changes in this particular patient's blood work. There may absolutely be good reasons to do that, but that's one of the places where I think specifically IT can change. But there's also other things that we're seeing in the industry, the pay-for-performance, also known as pay-for-quality. Those kinds of initiatives, I think, are an important signal to the industry that we're going to start to move away from a strict reimbursement model. You know, we're going to give you this amount of money for this particular procedure, period, end of story. The way you get more money is you do more of those procedures, which is, frankly, an opportunity. It doesn't pay people for delivering quality. How would your doc? So you go see your doc. He puts you on cholesterol medication. He gets paid an office visit reimbursement for that. That's how it works today. I wonder, and this is just me wondering out loud, I wonder how healthcare would be different if your doctor got paid $1 for every LDL point he took off your cholesterol.
Right.
And I don't know anybody that's doing it quite that simply, but if we start looking at the metrics and we start saying, if I say to my mechanic, I'm going to pay you a fixed amount to keep my car running, and I don't change my oil, he's going to be calling me saying, you know, I need your car. Got to work on it now. So it starts to move us into where we want to be instead of waiting until we break and then we move into the system where we perform some procedures that we get reimbursed for appropriately. Let's start to move into a system where we simply avoid the healthcare. So how do you get cheaper healthcare? Let's not need so much of it.
Right.
And I think, you know, so I think those are some important, the pay for performance, I think, is the tip of the iceberg. And then you think about things like Walmarts and Walgreens and retail clinics that are starting to pop up all over. As we start to move healthcare from the most expensive place, which Rich already talked about, the intensive care unit, to the hospital, and from the hospital into the same-day surgery centers, and from those into medical groups, and, you know, open an MRI on Michigan Avenue, walk in there and get an MRI, you know, while you wait.
It's that I love your car analogy, because it I'm thinking about a situation of how many times does a physician or a primary care physician's office calls and say, Mr. Gaius, we haven't seen you in over a year. It's time for you to come in and get a physical. Now, my dentist sends me a card every 6 months reminding me to come in for my preventative dental work, cleanings, things like that. I don't get that from my primary care physician, and so it's up to me to remember to go in for my physical. And, by the way, there's nothing more aggravating than going to see your primary care physician and sitting in his or her office for 60 minutes or 45 minutes when you made an appointment to come see them. So I like your idea. If the healthcare system pays the healthcare providers to keep us healthy, one thing I think they'll do is start seeing us a little bit more frequently and catching things before they become a big problem. So the whole comment made earlier about our healthcare system is focused on treating the sick as opposed to keeping us healthy, that would be a big change. But I think it would have some huge value in lowering costs by treating illnesses early and treating them when they're preventable versus when they become very expensive to resolve and much more costly to do so.
employers are not going to put up with it anymore. They're going to look at this healthcare business like they look at every other aspect of their business, in the same way that employers drove costs out of their supply chain. I think you know, groups like the Leapfrog Group are going to start to really exercise some muscle here and saying, you know, we're only going to recognize physicians who are practicing medicine in the following way, and I think IT is going to be a component, a very important component of the way that employers are going to, you know, what, how did they take the cost out of the supply chain in their regular business?
And think about what the Leapfrog Group said when those major U.S. corporations got together. They didn't ask for much. They said, give us a computerized physician order entry system so physicians can order up tests and things like that, and it can be tracked properly. They asked for fact-based referrals, so when someone gets referred, it's based on the competency and the specialty of that person. Better staffing in ICUs, and then benchmarks. Let's be able to measure how well we're all doing. And that was a while ago. The Leapfrog came out. Many, many healthcare providers still can't address those four areas. So, Stan, I agree. I don't think companies are going to put up with it anymore. In fact, just recently, I'm actually very, very, very pleased to see companies are getting together, like Walmart and Intel and others, and actually taking this to the federal government, saying, fix this. Fix how we insure people, how we provide health care for them. Let's kind of get beyond everybody optimizing their small part of the health care delivery and supply chain. Let's all start working together. So that's why I remain optimistic.
Now, we look at the cost side of it. See, my health insurance cost is not reducing. It increases every year. At the same time, I also have some physician friends who say we don't get paid as much as we used to get paid in the past. So where's that money going? See, if the problem lies where, you know, there's not enough money, or we are not, like, we want to do IT innovation, that takes money. We want to have process improvement, that takes money. But if money is just vanishing somewhere, And the physicians are not getting paid, the hospitals are claiming that they are not getting enough reimbursement for what they bill, then how will they take that money and put it into some good use and get some healthcare reformation, if you will, from IT and non-IT standpoint?
I think it's important to not look at this thing as a point-wise optimization process. I don't think you can look at what's happening today and look at one little component in the healthcare value chain and say, how do I optimize that one thing? I think we really have to look at the chain end to end, from all the way through. If you look at all the constituents, frankly, I don't think government is going to be very effective at solving this problem. I think the people who are paying for healthcare, which is really the employers of the world, and maybe CMS, but the employers of the United States, I think those are the ones who are really going to become the driving force behind some substantive changes in the way we deliver care, which, you know, I think it's a really interesting question. I talk to physicians pretty frequently. I'm sure Rich does too. One of the questions I like to ask him is, knowing what you know, would you encourage your kids to become a doctor? And that's one of my questions, and I don't like the answer I get frequently. The other question is, what kind of car do you want your doctor to drive? Do you want your doctor to have to drive a 1973 Ford Pinto, or do you want your doctor to have the option to drive a BMW or a Mercedes, or maybe not a Rolls Royce, but do you want your doctor driving a nice, in many ways, this is analogous to the teacher crisis that we had some time ago. I think we have a physician crisis. I think we need a way to help our physicians earn the kind of money that they deserve, because that's the kind of doctor I want to go to. I don't want our best and brightest to go seek either specialties within healthcare or whole different fields altogether. How do we build an infrastructure? And I think this is one of the reasons why a lot of people are at Allscripts, and I suspect a Cardinal as well. We're in this because we want to change the industry. We want to change the way healthcare is delivered. And frankly, today it is. So between 7 and 15% of the documents in a chart room are either lost or misfiled. I've confirmed that in 50 different places. 7 to 15%. So, hi, welcome to Stanley's Bank. Only 7 to 15% of the time, we're going to lose your check. And at first I thought, hey, what a great idea. And then I realized MasterCard and Visa is not going to give me a break because the check got lost. They're going to charge me a late fee. Now, that's the inefficiency we're after. That's exactly the inefficiency. So because the check got lost, I had to pay extra now because we didn't have the information. So how do we boil this around? How do we move this? How do we move the industry? And part of it's information. We've talked about that before, and I belabor that point, I think, quite thoroughly.
All right, let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages and talk further about the kind of optimization that can be done through IT innovation, and also talk about the safety of healthcare, because definitely there's something goes wrong with the safety side of healthcare that could cost us lives and families and money. So that there's so much to lose there, so we got to really look at it and see how IT innovation can actually help us in these areas and change the outcomes. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages.
401s, stock, mortgage, retirement, wealth. We cover it all. Voice America Business.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Wearing a football jersey doesn't make you an athlete, just like riding a motorcycle doesn't make you a bad boy. And starting a business doesn't make you a true entrepreneur. True entrepreneurs with purpose transform their world. There is something qualitatively different about them. They are risk takers. They turn the ordinary into the extraordinary, transform the problems into solutions, and they are among the leading visionaries of our time. True entrepreneurs are, in other words, agents of change for our society and our world. Join Elizabeth Paget on Equinexus, Empowering Entrepreneurs Talk Radio Show, which airs live every Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time on the Voice America Business Network. Equinexus will introduce you to entrepreneurs as innovators and world-class leaders. Listen every Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 12 p.m. Eastern, to meet the people who have done it. Meet the people behind the businesses and organizations that are changing the world, and you will realize how you can change your world too. Tune in every Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 12 Eastern, on the Voice America Business Network for Equinexus, Empowering Entrepreneurs, with host Elizabeth Page.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who just tuned in, today's topic is cheaper, better, and safer healthcare. IT innovation can help. And our guests for today's show are Rich Guys and Stanley Crane. Rich is the Senior Vice President, Enterprise Solutions and Enterprise IT with Cardinal Health, and Stanley is the Chief Technology Officer with Allscripts. Before the break, we had an interesting discussion about different ways where IT innovation and overall process improvement can bring about the required change that we are all looking for. Let's continue our discussion, and after that, let's also look at the safety side of healthcare, because that there is a lot to lose if the healthcare side of it is not safe, because we are having our lives and money and, of course, families at stake. So let's continue the good discussion.
Sure. Stan, you had mentioned right before the break that we shouldn't look at this as a point solution. You know, the physicians say I'm being paid less, so therefore how can I provide good care? Well, the key here is not looking at just the, I agree with you, the physicians' part of the delivery chain or the supply chain side or the hospital side. You have to look at healthcare as a continuum. And only when you look at it as a continuum will you, I think, will we be able to really, really pull costs out and make healthcare safer, which means, that, and this is the perfect place for technology to come in place. If technology is all about automating, making things more efficient, digitizing information and transactions and making it available to other parts of a process, well, that's what technology, that's what IT does. I mean, that's what we're great at, and that's the opportunity I see in healthcare to let the physician, the patient, the hospital, the drug manufacturers, the pharmacies, all deliver better care by creating better products. Frankly, knowing how their products are improving healthcare and providing feedback on where things are working well and where they're not working well, and trying to address those. That's all about information flow. That's a technology driven solution that can drive a much larger process change and process innovation, and I think that's what companies are basically saying right now. We have got to start investing in healthcare. You know, hospitals, for instance, they don't have a lack of a budget to invest in technology. The problem is the technology invest in are things that we wouldn't call IT, or in CAT scans, MRI units, things like that. But God forbid you try to get some money to improve the patient billing system, or the procurement system, or the patient-focused systems, but more the systems needed to improve the experience in the institution itself. That's like pulling teeth in some of those institutions, and that I think that if that changes, then the IT investments will follow, the process changes, and we'll see a much better delivery system. And we'll see costs go down, and I think physicians will be happier, and they won't recommend to young people not to go into practice like we see people in IT today. Sometimes say, would you recommend somebody go into IT? Well, some people say no because they don't know about outsourcing or things like that. The fact of the matter is we need more people in IT, and I think we need more caregivers in healthcare in the future as well.
If you look at the way that the medical groups that we work with spend their money today, one of their big expenses is transcription. One of our sites in Salt Lake City, Central Utah, they have about 80 docs. They cut their transcription by $1 million. So they take that, you know, north of $10,000 extra per doc that they were going to spend for their transcription company, and they moved that into, they got to spend that money in different ways. Some of it, I'm sure I hope they gave to the docs, and some they had to make other improvements within the organization. So the just direct cost reduction, and it's the same thing. If we go back to the electronic banking analogy, well, once you've set it up to sort of copy forward, so my MasterCard bill this month is this amount and I'm done, I only have to fix the amount, we can help the physician document care electronically without having to use transcription. The other place that money is available today, there are thousands of clinical trials that are available that are recruiting today. And depending on how narrow the patient selection is, the revenue that a physician could have either being a clinical researcher or simply referring a patient to a potential clinical trial is significant, and we're doing that with a number of our clients today. Holston Medical Group last year made $2.5 million performing clinical trials, which normally in a group their size they wouldn't have the infrastructure if they tried to do it in paper, but because they were electronic they were able to tap into that whole different revenue stream. And what's that? How does that help us? That helps us get drugs to market quicker. That helps us get improved procedures in place with clinical trials. And the money is available today for us to help facilitate that connection between the pharmaceutical company and the medical group to do these things. And then conversely, if there's ever a drug recall, you know, walk into your normal chart room with those wonderfully efficient ways of moving charts around. Please pull all patients who are on Vioxx, and let's send them a nice letter about we want you to stop taking this. So there's the staff that's handling that paperwork. There's this office space that's taken up by those physical records. There's some opportunities for improvement that are significant. And I think we have a lot of these kinds of solutions: clinical trials, transcription reduction, electronic communication of labs to LabCorp and Quest and other lab agencies, and to the reference labs in the hospitals, where we're doing all this stuff electronically today, as opposed to here's the facts, give somebody an opportunity to fat finger the data, which just adds another cost into the system. You're paying an extra data entry clerk to have to type in all the faxes. So the sending the labs in order and the results coming back electronically, those are all things that we can do today that can start to help lower the cost and increase the revenue to the physician and medical group.
And, you know, Stan, just a thought, and your company is leading the way on this. There's a lot of areas we need to computerize, but if we can find ways to create incentives, grants, things of that nature that allow us to computerize our primary care physicians' offices, though not the total solution, that will be a gigantic step forward in allowing us to have all the information in a digital format that will allow better healthcare and safer healthcare to ensue.
The insurance companies have been actually the PBM, pharmacy benefits managers, the people that do the drug insurance. They've been very supportive of our NEPSI initiative in terms of providing funding for physicians to help them get started. So in making the transition, I don't see it as a black or white thing. How do you go from, in a small doctor practice, most small practices today have a computer. They use it for patient billing. They use it for scheduling. But they don't use it for the clinical component of the visit, just for the administrative component. What ERXNow was all about, our electronic prescribing thing, was a transition to help the physician for free start to write prescriptions electronically and start to use a computer for the first time. One of the side effects of that is I do the drug interaction checking and the dose checking at the point of care. I also display formulary. So why do I care about formulary? So my doctor writes a script for me for cholesterol. Maybe he doesn't know it. Maybe that's a mid-tier drug for me, so it's my second-tier copay. So for me as a patient, I'm about to pay $20 copay for a drug I'm going to be taking forever, as opposed to the $5 medication that my insurance company would have preferred that I write. So the absolute worst case is it's an off-formulary med. What happens today is I go to the pharmacy. The pharmacist says, I need to call your doctor back. There's a problem with your prescription. So the pharmacist calls the doc. They leave messages back and forth for one another while I'm prowling the aisles of Walgreens trying to figure out if I need new lawn furniture. And then eventually, between the pharmacist and the doctor leaving messages for each other, they decide on a different medication for me, which I wasn't a part of. What I love about, one of the things I love about ERXNow is now I'm a part of that transaction. So the doctor can say, oh, I see Lipitor is a mid-tier drug for you, Stanley. I would really prefer to put you on that as opposed to this other drug, which is the preferred drug by your insurance company. What do you want to do? And my doctor and I talk about it. We say, do I want the $5 copay or the $20 copay? And I participate in my care with my doctor as opposed to sort of this phone tag behind my back. And formularies change all the time. The average formulary changes every 4 days. Why? Drugs come off the market, branded medications become available generic, so a formulary med may have been covered one day but not the next. The average physician sees over 20 different formularies. The patients who have 20 different formularies, and they change every more often than once a week. There is no way a human being can keep up with that. But I'm a computer. ERXNow, on behalf of the doctor, I can keep up with that stuff. We get up to the second updates of formulary, so the physician has that information so he can make a better decision. So I, the patient, get safer medications, but I also get potentially a cheaper medication that's still effective, that's in the same class as the other medications that the physician had to choose from. And we facilitate that, and then, of course, there's the benefits of electronics, so that as this physician sends the information electronically to the pharmacy, I no longer, as the patient, have the option of just pocketing the script and walking home. We're actually doing some studies now to understand compliance. How is patient compliance better? Did I forget to fill a prescription? Well, now the pharmacist knows. They electronically got notified that I got a prescription. So he'll call me and say, hey, Stanley, your script's ready. Oh, right, I forgot about that. and I may be slightly more compliant.
Now, talking about these IT innovations that we're talking at, there are some good technologies which are really about to make a difference. Coming to the very adoption challenge that we usually see in healthcare has, some people say that, yes, we are at the cutting edge, but most people say that, you know, in healthcare, IT has not got that so-called level of importance that it deserves. And it starts from the stakeholders who do not buy in that easy. And secondly, once you are able to put a technology in place, the actual users who are physicians, nurses, and things of that nature, they are not able to adopt, or they have a reluctance because they get comfortable with an old way of doing things. So what are we doing regarding that? Because we can spend the money, but we cannot really shove something down their throat and say, use it.
You know, it's a great question. Healthcare gets really complicated in this area when you talk about stakeholders, because there are so many different stakeholders. And I'm not saying that's making an excuse for healthcare, because there's other industries that are complex. But in healthcare, there are so many groups that control or make decisions related to the healthcare delivery continuum. It's doctors, it's nurses, it's hospital administrators, it's insurance companies, it's companies themselves and controlling the kinds of plans their employees utilize or have access to. So it's just very complicated in trying to get the right stakeholders together. And what Stan just described, the things he's doing in the physician's office, even the physician environment can be challenging, because different physicians in the same office may have different ideas of what they want done or what they think is important. So I think the key here is, like every type of dramatic change, there has to be a birthing platform that creates a catalyst for change and people see the light. And again, you know, I think I see some of that happening right now. But if we're going to implement pretty significant change, we've got to get the stakeholders aligned. By the way, I left out one of the largest stakeholders, the federal government, who without question is the single largest payer and a very large provider of health care as well through the various institutions that it supports. So what we have to do is we have to get the stakeholders together and acknowledge what the problem and the opportunities are, and then start mapping out a plan for them that allows us to move forward. So in the physician's office, we need solutions, technology solutions, for instance, that in effect gives to a physician's office, in effect, like an ERP system that today companies like ours would take for granted. Well, those don't exist today, or they're not particularly well, I should say they do exist, but they're not particularly well implemented. They're very costly. And so the key stakeholder, the physician, says, I can't afford it, can't pay for it. Oh, and by the way, I usually get things free anyway, so can you give me that solution for free, which then makes it very difficult for people to create game-changing solutions that turn the marketplace around.
Well, I mean, there's two things. So ERX Now is free. It's a free web-based prescribing, has no install, it's easy, it's safe, it's secure. You know, it's free to the physician. It costs absolutely nothing. Yes, you can sign up www.nationalerx.com and, you know, sign up today. You can be writing. Our record is that a physician went to that site, signed up, proved they were a physician, authenticated their identity, and wrote their first prescription in 12 minutes. So it's not only free, it's apparently easy to learn, because the guy figured out how to add a patient and how to write a prescription in 12 minutes. So, you know, that's one part. The other part of it is the Stark rules have just changed, and with the change in Stark rules, that gives the hospitals the opportunity to subsidize technology into their surrounding medical community. So I think we're going to see a lot of that of movement of basically a change in the business. ERX, we do not sell the software to the physician, which historically HIT we've always done, is we sell the technology to the, in our case, the medical group or the hospital or the MIS department. We're seeing some with the Stark changes and for hospitals and with ERX, you know, we're giving it away.
I think people too sometimes don't understand in healthcare or underestimate how tough some of these laws are that prevent different parts of the healthcare continuum to collaborate with each other. It's just amazing that you have to go to the federal government to get safe harbor laws or rules passed for a physician to connect to their primary hospital they're affiliated with. So it's good to see the Stark laws are starting to come into play to make this easier, because I think, right or wrong, many people use that as an excuse to say, well, I can't do anything here anyways because I can't work with this hospital because I'll get pulled in on Medicare kickback law violations.
The other thing that I think is evolving, and I hope it evolves faster than it is today, is the standards for connectivity. So I'm very comfortable that 5 years from now, every doc in the United States is not going to be using an Allscripts solution. So we and the other HIT vendors, we've got to come together and agree on a set of standards so that we can exchange information for the benefit of the patient and set up, you know, whether it's RIOs or CHINs or NHINs or whatever acronym you choose, there's got to be a way for us to collaborate for the good of the patient to deliver the information to the point of care. So the evolution of the standards of CCHIT and certification bodies like that, I think, are an important initiative. But again, if I look over the fence at the finance community, at the financial community, their standards are far stricter than ours. Ours are, it's not unusual to get an HL7 implementation guide that's 150 pages long. How can there be a 150-page explanation of how we implemented the standard? That means it's a standard in quotes.
Right.
I'm personally very supportive of much more controlled and I want to say dictatorial, strong standards. Before I was in healthcare, I was in the mail in the email world, and SMTP and POP3, and you know, that's a standard. This is what you do. This goes here. End of story. No questions about it. You know, the HL7Z segment is means that we have opportunities to improve, and I hope we in healthcare benefit from and learn from the great work that's been done in all the financial standards and EDI.
Yeah, you know, I think people differ on this. Many people want the federal government to take over healthcare. Most, I think, say no. But the federal government can have a huge impact on driving these standards, or at least demanding the right players get around the table and hammer out a standard. That HL7 standard you talked about sounds like, to me, it evolved into a guideline from its original intent. And that, I think, is just indicative of what happens in healthcare. You can see the whole sort of standards processes in the industry groups. You can see the whole path littered with those type of results that are clearly less than optimal.
We have got to not use our proprietary systems as defensive moats and castles to keep our customers inside. We have got to break down those moats, and Allscripts, we are breaking down those barriers to communication and collaboration in the healthcare community,
right?
Because we're not going to convert everybody to one system ever.
Right.
You know, as good as I believe our systems are, and our TouchWorks version 11 product, which is going live in George Washington, it's a great breakthrough product, but it's not going to be right for everyone. It's not going to meet every need for every single person, but it is an important step that we recognize as an industry that we need to be supportive of complete standards that allow us to interoperate with one another and collaborate with one another for the good of the patient and for ourselves. You know, our family. What kind of healthcare system do you want your family to be in? And let's build that system, which talks about things like collaboration and connectivity and interoperability. And we technically can solve this problem.
And by the way, I think that applies to even the healthcare supply chain. There is a constant tension between protecting your information and protecting your products in a way that maximizes the benefit of the company. That's what companies do. They maximize their profits and shareholder value, et cetera. But you have, at some point we have to say, these are the things that we're willing to give up for the benefit of the larger healthcare supply chain. And again, that's where standards groups come into play, but more importantly, that's where you get coalitions or consortiums of companies getting together saying, we're just not going to settle for the status quo anymore. And again, technology is going to be a huge part of the solution.
On behalf of the show and our listeners, I'd really like to thank you, Rich and Stanley, for this very stimulating discussion about what we can do when it comes to IT innovation and how it can help deliver a better, a cheaper, and a safer healthcare.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being on the show today.
That was very much. I enjoyed it very much. Thanks very much.
Now, IT innovation has helped organizations and community in general in other areas, and when it comes to healthcare, as we see that the challenge is a little tougher because we are looking at a lot of dependencies on business partners, and then there's also an uphill battle to make change the mindset of our stakeholders and adopters who are going to actually use the IT innovations. And in addition, the healthcare IT needs to work towards more standardization and interoperable technologies so that the true ROI is actually achieved. Good news is that there is an awareness and people are trying. How long does it take to reach the nirvana where we have a safer, better, cheaper healthcare? Time will tell, but let's keep up the good work. Thank you again for listening to CIO Talk Radio. This is Sanjog All, your talk show host. Till next week, take care and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Join Sanjog Gall next Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific for another hour of CIO Talk Radio.